Hello, everybody. My name is Kelly Lydon, and I am want to introduce Brian Gallis. He is a YK Chiller product manager responsible for supporting that line and others. Today's discussion will be about liquid level sensor diagnostics, and now I introduce Brian.
Hello, everybody. I'm going to talk to you today about the YK, YD, YR liquid level sensors and diagnostics, problems that we've actually had in the past and fixed, and things that often lead to misdiagnosis when dealing with liquid level issues. First thing I want to say is that the device is exactly what its real name is. It's a level sensor. It's not a level controller. It only determines the amount of refrigerant coverage on the probe, and it transmits a 0 to 5 volt DC signal back to the OptiView. That's proportional to the amount of coverage. The OptiView makes the decisions on what it wants to do with the variable orifice valve that subsequently gives you your liquid level in the condenser. The OptiView does average the data coming back from the liquid level sensor to eliminate scatter on it. So any delays that you see on your chiller panel on liquid level compared to what you're seeing happening through your condenser sight glass, not typically the liquid level sensor. That delay is designed into the OptiView program. If you were to look at your voltage on a voltmeter at the sensor or to look at your voltage on the proper analog input channel for your chiller, I know that's channel 23 on the YK, but it varies depending whether you're on a YD or YR. If you look at the voltage on that, that voltage is pretty nearly real time of what's happening to level on the probe of the sensor. Often other issues that have to do with refrigerant level and level stability are misdiagnosed to the sensor. The sensor has had its share of issues and things about it that caused problems in the past, but there is almost equally an amount of issues that come in that were just misdiagnosis and attributed to the level sensor. Some of those things, the most common of those things, are an insufficiently high set point in the condenser that allows you to lose and regain your liquid seal at the subcooler entrance. And that one shows up often in chillers that have been out for a while that may or may not have had, may have had some leaks, and refrigerant level isn't what it was at the shipment. And it's oftentimes, you know, customer doesn't want a refrigerant replenished, and so the chiller's operating marginally, and the first response of many people there is, okay, I'm going to get a lower level in the condenser and push more in the evaporator because that's what I'm watching for my performance and capacity, but that can lead to instability. Another thing would be extremely low load or high head, where your orifice is at a full closed position, incapable of stacking refrigerant in the condenser. That's not a leak tight valve when it's fully closed, because it's never intended to run a chiller with zero load, other than hot gas zero load, which accounts for that. But so that valve's not intended to be leak tight. So if you have high head and really low load, so you have a low refrigerant flow requirement through the liquid line, high head, so you have plenty of pressure, push a lot of liquid through the nearly closed valve, that could lead to a case where you can't stack. Another one would be if your variable orifice actuator has dead spots, or if it was loose to the valve stem, and that U-bolt type clamp that we have on there needs to be completely tight, needs to be wrench tight, finger tight. If it does not, can't fool somebody, it's fooled me in the past. And that needs to be really tight. It will give you know, like a stick slip situation, and OptiView will think that its corrections weren't big enough to adjust refrigerant level, and the next correction is going to be a longer pulse, and you're just going to go into more instability. Wiring issues have been problems in the past, particularly at the wiring harness end DIN connector. That's something you definitely want to rule out before deciding that the level sensor is failed. Naturally, in most cases, if that were there were a wiring problem and you replaced your level sensor, you could fail a second level sensor if the cause was because of a short on the signal, or cause was the 12-volt supply shorted to the signal. And then finally, unstable plant situations causing the PRV or the VGD to fluctuate, which then would drive level to fluctuate. Those things can be diagnosed, you know, otherwise. Low set point in the condenser. I'm going to talk about that specifically in a little bit. But low load, high head. You can look at your orifice valve, see where it's at. Is it full closed? If it's full closed, do I have no level in my condenser? Well, the level sensor, if it's telling you you have extremely low level, it may not be zero because of the raining in the condenser and the puddle that forms in the coupling that sensor sticks into. But that's easy enough to tell you. You know, low indication, then the sensor is doing what it's supposed to. Actuator dead spots, that you're just going to have to watch operation in the actuator, and the manual function can help you do that. And wiring issues, that's meter and continuity checks. And unstable plant is by taking over your vanes and your drive, or your drive one by one, you can see which device, or your variable orifice and manual, you can get a better idea of what device is leading the problem. Now, proper level set point, I talked about that. I mentioned that. That's the value that holds condenser refrigerant about a half inch to an inch above the top of the subcooler when you're looking at the subcooler through the condenser sight glass. Occasionally, we get questions of where should my level be on my condenser sight glass. Actually, there is no reference on your condenser sight glass. The glass is there so you can look through it and see your subcooler. The proper level is that which is about a half inch to an inch above the subcooler, because that's what we figure is enough to prevent a gas vortex blowing through at the subcooler entrance and causing gas blow by in your liquid line. What happens when you're a little bit low, similar to a vortexing in a tank or pulling the plug in your bathtub, that vortex you see, same exact thing, is that you'll get gas blown into the liquid line, which will sort of choke the liquid line. The rest of the refrigerant in the condenser will move to spots other than the center where the subcooler entrance is. So your level sensor may actually see an increase in level in the condenser where it's located at. In the meanwhile, you're having a problem blowing gas through the liquid line, and that needs to be resolved by closing the orifice. But the control is going to want to open the orifice because it sees a high level in the condenser. And all of that, in cases where that's the only cause of the problem, is mitigated if you run your level higher so that the vortex can't form. That is probably the single most often cause of any misdiagnosis on a level sensor, is if your level's changing in your condenser and your level sensor's reporting it to you, there's absolutely no problem with your level sensor. It's doing a great job trying to report to you a fluctuating condenser level. Now, there are times when the level sensor can be the cause of fluctuation if there's a short span on it, because every time level changes, the voltage it puts out is bigger than what the OptiView should expect. But that we'll talk about a little bit when we talk about the calibration. That's easy to check. The looseness in the actuator, like I said, is one where the OptiView then can't respond. It's seeing changes in level, and as it corrects the valve, it's not getting the right fix on level. Now I'm going to talk about the level sensor and some things about ordering parts for it. There are two suppliers for the level sensor. The sensor part number for the whole device, the whole level sensor device, is the same for either supplier, because what engineering specifies is a device that's going to read R134A. In cases, there's also, we have the oil sensors, the POE sensors on the YD, but anyhow, the device is going to read the fluid. We'll talk about, you know, condenser level specifically now, but it's spec'd to read 134A over the length of the probe and operate at 12-volt supply signal and give a 0 to 5-volt DC signal back. Now, so, you know, if you could build something that could do that with you know, anything you can conjure up, it'll meet the spec. But so there's two suppliers. Their boards are slightly different looking. Probably most people have seen some come with four push buttons on the control board. Some come with two potentiometers. and you can't get a specific style of the whole sensor by ordering a specific part number. The part number is whichever one the plant bought or whichever one Baltimore Parts bought. Now, when we started having issues with this, what we wanted to do was make it so you can do this more cost-effective for everybody and a little bit easier, and that would mean things people have done in the past, you know, getting the sensor and trying to change the board. Well, now for either type, you can order just the head. It's the conduit box, the LB box with the board mounted in it, with the wiring harness plug connector installed in it, and can change that out. So you can't go to the parts book and look liquid level sensor, here's the part number, or look at the device that came on your chiller on the side and get the 325 liquid level sensor part number off the side of the box and order it and continue to order it until you randomly get the right thing. That's not going to be the way to go. Both of the YK Mod F parts book and the YK Mod G parts book in the controls components sections both pretty clearly say the replacement head for the push button type and the replacement head for the potentiometer type. If you're getting a replacement head for the push button type, we also spell that out as for the 6-inch probe or the 8.5-inch probe. The 8.5-inch probe is used only on the size X or larger YK shells. Those be, you know, typically the big YD shells or the J7 shells. The only reason we specify the probe length for the head is because the vendor pre-calibrates. And so they'll pre-calibrate the one we specify for the 8.5-inch probe. They'll calibrate it for that probe. The 6-inch, they'll calibrate for that. It doesn't matter whatever head you get. If you are capable of doing a proper recalibration, the hardware is exactly the same on the push-button head. It's definitely different from a potentiometer head to a push-button head. Like I said, those part numbers are in the parts book. The YK Mod G parts book for a period of time mistakenly described the different heads by the vendor name, but we've fixed that to say push buttons and potentiometers, realizing that out there you have nothing to indicate to you who the vendor is for which type. In the meantime, the push button is the innovative solutions. If you were to have an old book laying around and you could remember this, the push button's innovative solutions, the potentiometers is Hansen. The reason that still exists a lot as a problem of having two heads is for a period of time, Baltimore Parts primarily stocked up with the push button type, so any replacement parts out in the field would come as the potentiometers. Baltimore stocked with the potentiometer type. And the plant has been building for years with primarily the push-button type. There are periods of time where the plant couldn't get push-buttons on time for the load of chillers, and they would get the potentiometer type.
This is the bad one.
And star 6 on your phones to mute is good so that we just don't get the crosstalk from each other. The probe... In most cases on the device, in almost all cases, the problem with if there's a problem that's actually with the sensor, it's with its electronics. The probe portion that's inside the chiller is exactly what I'm going to describe now. It's a solid stainless steel rod wrapped in a leak-proof rubber sheath around it, and it's surrounded by that outer metal cylinder. And the inner rod and the rubber sheath come through a compression ferrule and a nut screwed onto the probe housing flare, built right onto that probe housing flare. The reason for that sheath is the inner rod just needs to be electrically isolated from any of the other metal. That's what the rubber sheath is doing. The only thing that could happen to that probe inside, short of it breaking off, which it's going to be a long time after you've broken tubes before you would break that sensor off if you had some kind of crazy extreme vibration that we've never heard of. But the only thing that would happen to it would be a hole in the sheath, and know that when the inner probe's shorted to something grounded, including the outer part of that probe, the outer cylinder of the probe, if there's a short between the inner and the outer, the output goes to full scale. So to diagnose if you had a problem with the part that's in your chiller, the probe portion of the device, then what you would see is linearly increasing output as level came up. And then what happens is you'd see your refrigerant level output jump to full scale when you reach the point where the hole or the rupture or whatever was on the rubber sheath, because then you create an electrical short through the refrigerant from one aspect of the probe to the other. Then when the condenser was empty, the final reading might be strange. It would change slowly over the course of like a day or so as the trapped charge in there boiled out of the leak. A good sensor almost always has a short duration change when you empty your condenser as liquid boils out of the coupling that's down on the bottom of the shell that's pointing in an upward direction so it would hold charge. But as that charge boils out, you almost always have a short duration change in the level at the low end part of the sensor span. But if you had a leak, it's generally going to show up as about a day or so change decreasing level in your on your sensor. I've only ever seen one case described that actually meets this of a leaking sheath on a probe. Now I'll talk about the actual proper ways to check that your level sensor is calibrated correct or not. There's only two points on that probe that matter, and that's fully uncovered and fully covered. So when the condenser is empty, what you would do is make sure that the sensor is reporting a near zero level percent. When the condenser is filled, what you want to check is two things. Is does the sensor come to at near 100% when the sensor is fully covered, but that's not happening until the sensor is fully submerged. So wrong on that end would be obtaining, you know, near 100% when I'm three-quarters of the way up the probe, or not achieving near 100% when I'm fully submerged. Like I said earlier, you know, mid position on the sight glass has absolutely no significance. The manufacturing tolerances on the shell could put the sight glass any number of positions compared to the center of the sensor probe. Oftentimes in the past, the potentiometer type sensor was adjusted in the field to give a 50% reading at the center of the sight glass. You know, lots of guys have spent a lot of years doing that, and they actually would come out with a device that was calibrated pretty well, but that is still, that's the wrong way to set the device. That device also only has that potentiometer device, still, that even has only two fixed points that you want to adjust. Fully uncovered, that's where zero should exist and set by the zero offset pot, and fully covered, and that's where 5 volts should be the output of that device, and that's set with the span potentiometer. You get what you get in the sight glass. What you're concerned with is that the response is linear between fully uncovered and fully covered. I could set a device with a 1-inch working span that would be wrong, so a 1-inch working span, and adjust the offset to give you 50% in the center of the glass, and I'm sure most of the guys on this phone could do that. We can see how, you know, that would be, that's wrong, and then every small incremental amount change in refrigerant when it's within the bounds of that working span would give a large change in voltage, which the OptiView would interpret as a large change in refrigerant, and then it would give a large change to the valve, and then that's just going to lead to hunting. Next thing I want to mention is if the level sensor checks with the condenser empty and with the probe completely flooded don't seem reasonable, then the next thing to check is to make sure that the sensor's fine and the continuity of the panel is okay. There's a service instruction out there. It's service instruction SI0187, and that describes kind of in painful detail the functions of the push buttons on the push button sensor. The manufacturing plant almost exclusively builds with that sensor. They have been doing for years, so I'm going to talk in depth about that device. That's what you'll find most often out there on the chillers. So what you want to find out is if the sensor seems to be incorrect because it's not reporting near the bottom of its voltage span when the condenser is empty, or it's not reporting near the top of its voltage span when it's completely submerged, or the output doesn't appear to be linear as much as you can tell with what you can see through the view of your sight glass, then you want to start with verifying that the voltages at the ends of the spans are correct and the device isn't failed in any kind of a way that it can't produce those voltages. So what you first do is verify that the OptiView, this is something that's going to be basic to a lot of you, but it's just good steps to follow with the device rather than jumping into any conclusions on it. You want to first verify the OptiView supplying a good 12-volt power to the device and that's coming through on the correct wiring terminals. The supply is the red wire, and it goes to sensor terminal 1. And that's referenced, and that's your 12 volts. Generally runs, about 11.98 volts or so on most of the chillers I've ever seen. It is referenced to DC ground on the black wire that's connected to terminal 2. That voltage, when you measure it, it's not a regulated 12 volts off the OptiView. It's nominal 12 volts. It's generally the number I said, but we always want to make sure it's higher than about 11.5 volts. The sensor is designed to run from 11 to 30 volts. There's a jumper that splits that range in half that I'm going to mention here, but 11.5 is about where that starts getting too low. Also verify, if you have 11.5, then there's something going on the power supply out to it. Also, you want to verify that the sensor jumper is installed on the correct pins by the vendor. There's on the push-button sensor, there's a jumper that allows you to select between 11 and 18 volts as your supply voltage or 18 to 30 volts. Since we're giving it a supply from the OptiView of 12 volts, you want that to be on the 11 to 18 volt position. They come that way from the vendor. If somebody moved it or the vendor made a mistake, it would be the reason why that wasn't there. If it's not there, the device is not going to be able to typically, it's not going to be able to drop voltage down as far as you need it to. It's not going to be able to make voltage as high as you need it to do on the high end because it's expecting a higher input source. So you want to be on 11 to 18 volt position. That's marked on the sensor on the board. The potentiometer sensor also has a jumper. That one doesn't have anything to do with the power supply voltage range. On the potentiometer sensor, its jumper is determining whether you want your output to be coming to you in a range from 0 to 5 volts DC or from 0 to 6 volts DC. That one should be set on the pins closest to the probe end that gives you the 0 to 5 volts. That's not marked because that's a potted board in there, but it's the two pins closest to the probe end. So to do the checks, make sure that the voltage is. I'm going to back up one step. I want to mention as I get into the troubleshooting that the right way to look at that device is as two parts of its circuit. One part of its circuit is measuring the probe as if the probe is a capacitor and it's measuring the capacitance. The other part of the board is a transmitter, and what it's doing is it's taking what the metering side of that board did and it's making it proportional to 0 to 5 volts, sending that back up to the OptiView. So what you want to do is check the output voltages that the transmitting side of the board is going to give you. So what we went through so far is, I'm going to just take a second here to kind of rehash where we've gone through on diagnosing this device. First being, it's your level sensor, it's not your level controller. So if your level's changing and it's telling you about that, it's probably not the problem. And the next thing I want to mention is that the device is only referenced at full empty and fully covered. Midpoint on the sight glass has nothing to do with an accurate calibration. The next thing I want to mention is that it's highly sensitive to being wired right, and that we need to ensure that always the first thing to do is ensure that the OptiView is giving it 12 volts. If you suspect something with it, the next step to do is to look at the probe with the chiller off and the condenser empty. And the key part about both those being true is if somebody's running cold condenser water and you have your evaporator loop sitting just secured and it's been sitting there a while, your condenser may not be as empty as you think. So empty condenser, verify that the device is reading near zero. Then either before you shut it off or the next step is manually control the variable orifice so that you can throttle flow and get the condenser level up and verify that that device goes to its maximum position, which is awful close to 100%, and that that happens not until the device is fully flooded or very close to fully flooded. The reason I'm going to say I'll talk about those in terms of close to zero, close to 100, about fully flooded is because if you look in a service manual that tells you that the empty position is 0.43 volts, and you knock yourself out all day long trying to make that say 0.43 volts instead of 0.4 volts or 1% or 2% or 3%, then you probably could be spending your time on something else. The device is, if you think about it, it's 6 inches of probe in there at an angle, probably giving you 5 inches of working length. Over that span of that, it's going to go from somewhere low voltage, about a half a volt, to 5 volt. So think about what a couple tenths of a volt means on all that range, or 1%, 2%, 3% means on all that length. What you want to do is just make sure that the device is calibrated so that it's going to cause the chiller to work. What you want to have is, if you have a less than zero reading on the bottom, the only reason we'd ask you to change that is if you were calibrating the device, change it because you just don't know how far the voltage is less than what the OptiView can read. If you're less than zero, if it's reading greater than 100%, you just don't know how much dead band space you have on the top end with a voltage greater than what the OptiView will see as 100%. So I'll go into those checks now. So for to check the voltage that the device is going to give you when it thinks it's empty and when it thinks it's full, you would want to test those voltages with the white wire, the signal wire that comes in and lands on terminal 3 on that board. That's the wire that transmits the proportional voltage back to the OptiView. You'd want to check it with that landed on the board, and then with that, there are times when you check that with that wire off the board or land off of terminal 3 and you're checking voltage on the terminal strip in the sensor to rule out any possibility of a short in the wiring or a voltage coming in through a short in the wiring to something else, which would cause the OptiView to see a signal, or if you had a short in that wiring, could cause that the device can't drive the signal back to the OptiView. Oftentimes, if the reading is 0.00 on your meter, back at OptiView or off the device, that would be my first hint at I definitely want to check my continuity really good and make sure that I'm just not either have a break and not getting back to OptiView, or if I see that the sensor, that I'm just not dragging down that device because I have a dead short to ground. So what you want to do then is when the white wire is lifted to do a check, any type of check, all it is your 0 to 5 volts output, so the wire itself, it's okay, it's going to be safe to have that wire lifted and measure off of it. The only the best possible cause to do damage is if you don't watch where that free end of that wire goes and it would touch part of the circuitry that's the 12-volt supply on the board, then you have a chance to damage the microboard because that voltage is fed right back into the microboard, not to the I.O. board, right to the microboard. So if you put 11, 12 volts on it, you'll do microboard damage. So when the white signal wire is lifted, what you can do is what you have to be aware of if you're going into this troubleshooting and you lift the white wire is now the OptiView is going to see 0 volts, going to say that 0%, and it's going to drive the orifice closed to try and gain level. So if you're getting into this troubleshooting, don't forget to take your orifice over in manual if the chiller is running. the voltage checks I'm going to mention you can do with the chiller off, but just be wary of that. The any point during its lifetime, the 12-volt supply was cross-connected to the signal terminal output, the device is trashed. It's ruined. It can't handle that. It will fail it. So you need to be careful of that. And I'm very much interested if on chillers where we are troubleshooting a level sensor problem and find out that, you know, you're getting some constant low voltage back or nothing back to the OptiView, and determine that the wiring was wrong, for instance, in the square DIN plug on the end of the wiring harness where the manufacturing plant had crossed the power and the signal wires. Is I'm very much interested in having that, if it's a warranty, that gets written in the warranty, or somebody calls me and tells me and lets me know. That's, we need to keep the plant from doing that, and you need to correct that. Like I said, there's no question about it. That will fail the sensor. The calibration of it, the transmitting device on this sensor, I think once people hear about it or they read the service instruction, it's a lot clearer than, like anything else. If you don't have the instructions, it's sometimes hard to do it. But it there's not much magical about it. It's a transmitter, just like many other transmitters, pressure transmitters, you know, flow DP transmitters. It's a pretty simple transmitter. And the push-button device is actually nice as a transmitter goes, because you can set the input value. That will be the bottom of the span and the top of the span, and you can also set the voltage you want at the bottom of the span and at the top of the span. In our case, the capacitance that's coming from the probe when it's empty is the process value for the bottom of the span. The capacitance coming off the probe when it's fully covered is the process value for the top of the span. And the voltages we want are, we want a voltage that's going to be at the probe about 0.4 volts for the bottom of the span and 5 volts for the top of the span. Now, as you're doing level sensor troubleshooting work, or if one needed calibrated out in the field, because it wasn't calibrated right at the vendors and you noticed it through the other checks that I mentioned, the thing to watch is if you're looking at OptiView analog input channel, it's 23 for the YK. It's different for the YD, the YR, but it's in the service manual. But if you're looking at that channel and you're comparing it to what you're reading on your voltmeter at the sensor, seeing a difference of about 87% of what your voltmeter says is not a problem. The OptiView intentionally drops voltage on that input signal coming in. When you actually take the values of the resistors that are doing that, the OptiView should be showing 87% of what you're getting out on your meter. That doesn't mean that people should call me if you're seeing 86% or 85% of what's out there on your meter. The resistors aren't that precise. But you're going to see some reading less than what you're getting out on the sensor, to the tune of about 87%, and that's intentional. And that's because that device is not taking the 5 volts regulated off the OptiView and sending it back. It's creating its own 5 volts off the 12 volts. So those resistors are there to help try to protect the microboard. So the transmitting side of the device, as I said, it's, you can set what level is the bottom of the span, what level is the top of the span, what voltage you want for the bottom of the span, and what voltage you want for the top of the span. The vendor does all those things before they ship it, but we need to know how to check those and adjust those in case that isn't correct or somehow something happened to that. Now, the potentiometer device has the voltages you get on your span fixed, but it lets you adjust the capacitance required to reach either end of the span. What I mean by that is the potentiometer device has a zero pot and a span pot, and it's a good question to wonder, what are those actually doing? The zero potentiometer actually is just an offset. It'll offset your voltage. The span potentiometer, that device is always putting out 6 volts at some amount of capacitance on it. you can turn that device to get 6 volts out of it. That's the potentiometer device. What that span pot does is it changes how much capacitance, which in our case is how much refrigerant over the length of that probe, it takes before it decides to give you 6 volts. Because we work on 5 volts, what we do is we turn that, when we're turning that span pot to set that device up properly so that you get 5 volts at full coverage, is we're setting that up so it takes more capacitance than that thing's capable of creating, because we're asking for more cover to length than we actually have, and we adjust that pot to the point that it comes out a fully covered probe's giving you 5 volts. So I just, as I talk about the push button probe, you know, you might wonder, how does that relate to the pot probe? That's why I told you that. The push button probe, we have full independent control of all four things, of high span coverage, low span coverage, high span voltage, low span voltage. The potentiometer probe, you can kind of get there from here, but I wanted to tell you how it's doing it. It's actually fixed voltage, adjustable where that voltage starts at for zero, and you adjust how much probe coverage will it take before it gives you that max voltage. Now I'll jump back to the push button probe, since that's what we find out there mostly. To check the span voltages, use the min button by itself to check the bottom of the span, or the max button by itself to check the top of the span. Before we had a lot more extensive instructions out there, sometimes it would be common to be in the device trying to adjust it and push the min button by itself and up or down buttons and max up or down buttons. And that would actually, what that would do is throw off your top of span or bottom of span voltages, such that you might end up with a probe that no matter how uncovered it is, it's going to only stop at like 1 volt and not ever get down to 0 volts or half a volt. Or likewise, on the top end, all it may be capable of giving you is 2, 3 volts instead of 5. But now that we know how to adjust it and the instructions are out there, we can make sure that's right. So that's one of the first things to check on it. And when you're checking your span voltages, it doesn't matter if the chiller's on, chiller's off, and where refrigerant is. That's why I told you that think of the device as a metering part and a transmitting part. When you're checking the span voltages, you're only dealing with the transmitting part of it. You're just checking what voltage it's going to give you at whatever you call bottom of span refrigerant and what voltage you're going to get at whatever you decided to call fully covered top of span refrigerant. So when you hold the min button by itself, what it does is it tells you the voltage that it's going to give you when it thinks refrigerant is at the place you called the bottom of my refrigerant span or empty. And so hold the min button by itself, it lets you see that. Holding the max button by itself, it lets you see the other end, the fully covered, the top of the span. It lets you see the voltage it's going to give you. And it also lets you adjust it. So while you're holding the min button, if you push the up button or the down button, it'll raise that voltage or lower that voltage, respectively. So the holding the min button and tapping the up button several times, I can make it so that my voltage I get when my probe's uncovered increases. So I can go from half a volt down there to a volt or 2 volts or higher. I like to use that span voltage check as whenever I decide that it's not other circumstances and my level sensor actually seems to be giving me trouble. I like to use the min or max button because I know when I push the max button I can get some high voltage out of that thing to check my continuity with it. So I can press that, check it with my meter across terminals 1, which I said was the signal wire, and 2, which is the DC ground, verify that I'm getting some 5 volts. If I don't like it, I can, while I'm holding that button, adjust it using the up or the down button, and then I can check whether I have that back at the OptiView. It allows you to let the device be its own voltage generator already connected to the wiring. The other thing is, when you do that simple step, if the device doesn't respond when you push the max button and try to adjust it with the buttons, or if you push the min button and try to adjust it, you already know at that point there's something wrong with it. And especially if you've removed, it's not dead yet until you've removed the signal wire and done that. Remember, if I ground my signal wire, that device can't give me 5 volts out. It can't drive dead short. So signal wire off on terminals 2 and 3 with my voltmeter, push the min button, see a voltage, can I adjust it for the up or down button? Likewise, push the max button, I see my voltage, can I adjust it with the min and max buttons? If I can't do that, there's something wrong with the board. Then you can get the replacement head part and change it out. The voltage, when you do that, you want to leave it at, is you, if you had a person watching the panel at the same time and telling you what they read, you'll see that about 0.4 volts, you'll be around 0, 1% or so. That's a good place to leave that. The vendor leaves it at 0, tries to get 0.00. That doesn't cause it not to work. That just gives you a 0.4 of a volt dead band when it's gaining level before the OptiView sees that as an increase in level. And that's pretty much starting to fill the puddle in the bottom of that coupling, and it's not going to cause you an op. That's not the cause of any problem you have on a chiller that's not working. It's just if you're in there, leave it about 0.4. Top end, if you have 5.00, 4.98 out at the sensor, OptiView's going to see that at about 4.6, and it's going to give you right about 199%. So that's the first thing to check is, are my voltages for the span correct? Then the next thing is, if you saw that level wasn't... So now that you know, this is a big help. Once you know that what your bottom of span voltage is and your top of span voltage is, you know for a fact then when your refrigerant is at the bottom of the span, because you know what voltage that thing's going to put out. And when it's at the top of the span, you'll know it's there because you know what voltage that device is going to be putting out. So if you had to make an adjustment to what refrigerant level it thinks is the bottom of the span or top, that's that step in the manual of pushing the min and max button together and pushing the up or down button. See, when you're holding the min and max buttons together on that push button level sensor, it's a dangerous place to be. It's as far as not for personal safety, but as far as for miscalibrating. So when you're holding min and max together, what that sensor's doing is it's looking at the feedback it's getting from its probe at that time, and it's waiting for you to assign that as the bottom of your span or the top of your span. So when min and max buttons are held together, what that's doing is it's looking where refrigerant is right now, and it's waiting for you to tell it what you want to do with that value. So min and max together, and then press and hold the up button for about 3 seconds. It's E slash down, F slash up. The E means empty. All right, so what we have then is we got to the point where we're going to set refrigerant level. So what you need to do is make sure level is where it needs to be for your calibration. So if I need to calibrate my empty position, my bottom of span refrigerant level, I need to have that condenser empty. And setting the bottom of span refrigerant level is the thing I'm most reluctant to do, because when the vendor calibrates that in a little glass tube that has only refrigerant vapor in it, that's as good of a zero calibration as you're ever going to get, provided he did it right. When I try to empty my condenser out, unless you had it evacuated and gas charged it for some reason, you really don't know you're as empty as the vendor had it. But regardless of that, if you did determine the bottom of the span refrigerant level was wrong or questionable and wanted to calibrate it, it's min-max buttons together and then the E slash down for the empty down. Hold those for 3 seconds. And what the device does, it now assigns that capacitance that it's reading right then and there from the probe, assigns that as the bottom of span. So capacitance drops, you know, as level drops, as coverage of the probe drops. So when that device is working then, whenever the capacitance gets to that number, that's where you get your voltage you set at the bottom, and anything less than that under the floor, and that's it. It's moot point there. So you want to make sure that's assigned right, and likewise, top of span, min-max buttons together. You have your probe flooded by either having your isolation valves closed and charge pumped over, which can be kind of a more labor-intensive way to do it. Or if your chiller's charged properly and you're at decent operating conditions on your plant, you can throttle the variable orifice yourself, You got to watch it really close, only move it in small increments so that you have level raised up pretty high in the condenser, and then you get it to where it's just slowly rising so that when it hits the top full coverage of that probe, you're ready to do min-max and the full F/up button and flag the fully covered. If you do the min-max up and the min-max down at any point other than when your level's where you want it to be, fully covered or uncovered, you've assigned that to the top of the span of your probe. So if I went underneath there and I did min-max down and min-max up while my chiller was either off or running at some spot, I did those right after each other without changing my level, it's never going to work because now it thinks that its span is about a hair's width long and refrigerant at the same spot is full and refrigerant at the same spot is empty. So I think that gives you the idea. I don't mean to downplay it and make it sound, you know, too simple there, but I want to be real clear that that's important. It's looking at where refrigerant is, and it matters at that point. And any one of those four calibrations are independent of each other, so if I needed to adjust my bottom of span voltage, for instance, I don't need to do the other three if I knew they were okay, or if I need to set my top of span refrigerant level, I don't need to do the other things if I knew they were okay once. So that's the nice thing about the push-button sensor. When it's working properly, it gives you full control. Now I'll talk a little bit about the issues the push-button sensor has actually had in its lifetime. So a ground jumper was added to it around middle of 2007. People probably have seen those. It goes from terminal 2, the DC ground, to the screw that is close to the probe that holds the board in. The reason for that ground jumper is engineering was working in the test lab, and they found a chiller where the chiller was at a constant level and the output was fluctuating about plus or minus 20% to 30% while level was constant. And they played around attaching a signal generator to the outside of the shell, and the vendor decided at that point that the metering circuitry of his board and the transmitting circuitry of his board, which previously were DC isolated from each other, should probably be on the same reference plane. So they added that jumper. The metering part of that device, the circuitry that's checking the probe out and knowing where the capacitance of the probe is, the metering part of the board, the one part that's measuring the probe, the two pieces of steel that make up the probe that's determining what the capacitance is, what that's doing is that where that front screw is closest to the probe that holds the board into the electrical box, that screw is acting as a piece of circuit. It's acting as a wire. If you ever took that screw out, you'll see that the circuit board, printed circuitry, actually comes to the hole around that screw and makes a ring. And that ring's not painted with the green shellac that the rest of the board is. It's intentionally there on purpose so that the printed circuitry goes over nice and clean, touches the base of the head of that screw, goes through the stem of the screw, into the threads, into the LB box, out the LB box, out to the threads where the probe screws in, and measures the outside of the probe. We can all see where the part that measures the inner rod of the probe is. That's that wire on that fourth unmarked terminal. That little short wire comes over and has the open lug and hooks right onto that center probe. So that's straightforward, that center probe to the wire right into the circuitry through the terminal block. The one part that measures the other side of our capacitor, the side that's attached to the chiller ground, the side that is the outer sheath, that is actually the circuit board is intending to contact the head of that screw. So it goes that path. So anyhow, they happen to use that screw. This will come in useful in a couple minutes here when I talk about another problem. But that screw is the one the vendor chose to use to ground because they had a nice clean contact to the circuit board, and they wanted to put the ground plane, the reference plane, on the same continuity on the metering side and the transmitting side, so they didn't get any ground loop problems coming around through the chiller. So that was the first problem it had, and that's why you see jumpers in most of these. They found that out. We immediately production switched so that jumpers were included. It's mentioned in that service instruction 187. So for a while, the vendor also was using Teflon tape where the LB box, the electrical box, screws onto the end of the probe to try and seal the threaded connection from allowing water to come into the electrical housing. However, as I just told you, that's part of the electrical path, so we had to ask them to stop doing that. That's one of the things mentioned in the service instruction, to make sure there's no Teflon tape or anything on there. Now, I will let you know that connection's pretty robust, that the threads, because that's a coarse thread and it's pretty large diameter, that seems to do very well at cutting through things like the paint. That kind of will confuse you when you see why is the box painted, if that's why. But really, that paint's not causing any problems. If you were ever curious about it, any sensors you come across, check with your meter whether you can get continuity across where those threads are, and I pretty much guarantee you will, that they bite through pretty good. But anyhow, the Teflon tape was a bad thing. We got rid of that. Next is the vendor. We finally got some concern about real situations out in the field where it looked like the indication would drift. Like on a chiller we knew was running at some percent level. Let's for sake of talking say 60% level at the center of the sight glass, and that's where we wanted it, and it looked all good, and it ran like that, and we were called back because of a low evap trip or something later, or low superheat on a YR. We come back and we see that the thing's now reading, drastically different, 90%, can't even see level in the glass. So we started investigating that. The first hurdle for that was because we didn't actually have thorough instructions out into the field, and so sometimes people would get in that situation I mentioned where they would be pushing buttons and get the voltage calibration off or the level calibration off. So the first hurdle was to convince the vendor that, because they would get realize this is drift, this is like an intermittent problem on your car that's not occurring, the day you decide to try and troubleshoot it. And so they, vendor would get this back, put it on their bench, and say it's miscalibrated. Well, the hurdle we got through was to convince them that the guys are actually understand the device and know what they're doing, and they're calibrated right, and we know it, and it drifted. So they attributed that to a chip on their circuit board. And what they did was they said that the chip that was being used on the circuit board wasn't a military-grade chip that they wanted, and if the ambient equipment room were pretty warm, they could see that thing could drift. The part that the weak link in that was just the fact that they said, that they could only reproduce it in the lab with, really high temperatures, higher than most equipment rooms are, but that they addressed that, though. They went and they respec'd to their sub-supplier not to use the cheaper-end, low-end chips that run the timing on the device, and they changed that. We thought everything was good and actually had a report back from one of the problem sites that had all these modifications had been made to their sensor, and they still had an actual drift condition. I actually got to go out to that site and help with that, and real drift, and that's when I found that the ground jumper that the vendor decided to put in there to fix that grounding problem they thought they had, what they did was they decided to use this is an important part, probably too bad it's at the end here, but the most important part of what I'm going to tell you from the call is they started using the star washer, a regular off-the-shelf external tooth star washer, little star washer, to put underneath that lug on that wire under the head of that screw. And what I found is the stars of that star washer, the diameter that those stars are able to contact is pretty nearly the same size as that ring of printed circuitry that's on the board. So in most cases, and you'll see it if you ever have one of these apart that had that washer that they don't have anymore, but had that washer, that you will see that the contact spot that's marked, that's because that washer, when you crank that screw down, scribes some marks on there, that in most cases, one, maybe two arms of the star washer were barely contacting that ring of printed circuitry, and the rest of them are doing a real fine job of scribing lines in the green shellac part of the circuit board. So what that would mean is the device would have good enough continuity to pass a test and pass a calibration and get a calibration, but that continuity would change, that there was a high resistance in that path, and it would change over time. And that what that thing's doing is measuring the probe as a capacitor, but it's really measuring it as a capacitor and a resistor. And so you start changing resistance in there, and you start changing what that output of the probe is for a given refrigerant level. So we asked them to get rid of the external tooth star washer and use an internal tooth star washer. So that's being done currently, but there's still plenty of devices out there with the external tooth washer. So one of the other points I want to mention in the call that's a good point to mention now is if you had a chiller at a job site and you went there and you saw level sensor wasn't reporting properly and you recalibrated it and that brought the way it's reporting back into line, if you get a call that happens again, most people aren't going to just recalibrate it again. And that's my recommendation to you. Don't recalibrate it again, because you'll be going back a third time and a fourth time and a fifth time and a sixth time and just recalibrating it. The first thing, months ago or a year ago, I would have told you, just change the head out. But what you want to do is look at that washer. The new ones are coming with an internal two-star washer. If you have the externally toothed washer and you're in a pinch and, you can get a new head for it because it's not working right, but in the meantime, you take that washer out of there. If you had a number 6 internally toothed star washer from the hardware store, perfect replacement. But if you don't, get that washer out of there altogether, put the ground jumper lug back under that screw head, tighten it down, and recalibrate it. But that was the problem, and those are the problems that sensor has had, those are things that have been fixed. We're investigating one other thing with it that can make it better is the inner rubber sheath I mentioned that's over the rubber sheath that's over the inner rod of the probe portion of it. Did some more testing on it and found that there's some permeability to it, so refrigerant can permeate it when it's brand new, and then it saturates to a level that it just stays at forever. When it's saturated, it has no impact on anything because it just stays there. But it may be the source of some difference between a vendor cal and once you have your chiller charged and running, that of a little bit of difference. So we're looking into that now, and that may be the hopefully last change to make to any of those. But I'm gonna be ready to take any questions here in a minute. Like I said, I wanted to just go through that and also mention to you that the fixes that were actually done to the sensor and what to look for out there. So I think Kelly wanted to go by region. He stepped out of the room here, but we can as long as. I can take any questions if somebody has.
How about we start by taking questions in, how about Northeast? Northeast, do you have any questions? Remember, *6 to unmute your phone. If you want to ask a question, why don't we just try to, as organized as we can, take questions if you have specific questions. How about Northeast? Northeast going once? *6 to unmute your phone. Okay. How about Southeast? Southeast, do you have any questions? Brian has given you guys a lot of information, I understand. And these are recorded, so if you want to listen to it again, and then maybe if you have specific questions, you can always contact Brian again. No questions from Southeast. How about Northwest? Northwest, any questions? Oh, I'm feeling very neglected here. How about Southwest? Okay, why don't I just open up the floor and say if anybody has any questions.
Oh, and let me mention one thing I wanted to say. I'm sorry I forgot to say it, but that service instruction has in the back of it to contact the vendor to get a replacement head for the probe, for the push-button probe, the Innovative Solutions vendor, because at the time I needed to get that out on the street to get you better instructions out there or more thorough instructions on the device. And at the time, I was sort of fighting internally to get the head made as a replacement part for that. I really wanted to tell you, here's the number for the replacement head part. But the vendor stepped up to the plate and said, hey, I'll just direct take these back, and I'll send new ones out. And I definitely welcomed the fact that they did that. But what I'm switching to now is, and I've told them, I'm going to want them, if anybody calls them and wants a replacement head, they're going to tell you what the York replacement part number is, and they're going to tell you that they're no longer doing that because the part number's in the parts book. If your chiller's in warranty, it's in warranty. If it's not, there's, you know, the other processes that you know about if the things apply. But you get it from Baltimore Parts, and the failed one goes back to the warranty return center like all the other parts because I need to get better control over what's coming back. The vendor, unfortunately, has not got as many back as he sent out. And it's not that he needs to get these back because it's going to make him go broke. It's because we're trying to find out if the fixes are working in the field, and we can't do that if the parts don't come back. So I'm going to drive that back through the warranty return center because we own that. We have control over that. And then I'll send bulk shipments out to the vendor after I do my have internal evaluations done here for the simple things like we talked about on the phone.
Brian, that SI that you mentioned, is that SIO? 0187?
That's correct.
Okay, SI0187 available on the portal.
And I'd like to change that and get rid of the phone number, which is what we'll probably do. But remember out there, everybody has that floating around somewhere where they've already printed it out. And so that's why I'm going to tell the vendor, when they call you, tell them thanks, but no thanks. And Brian has a different way to do that.
Okay. I will make that change as well. So. Last call for questions related to this topic. Anybody? Well, everyone, thank you so much for your time. You were very courteous, and I apologize for that problem with what happened in the middle. I don't know how that happened, but our next Factory to Field call will be held on Thursday. It's YR with Scott Sunday. He is going to be covering YR issues and the history of the changes. And that's on Thursday, February 25th at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time. The same conference phone number. Again, I want to thank you and have a good afternoon.
Thank you.